So I've called this talk, Why Practice Zazen. So Zazen is the sitting meditation. And it's in our tradition, Ordinary Mind Zen, it's really at the heart of what we do. So in some Buddhist traditions, especially for people who are not monastics, there's more emphasis on devotional practices and generosity practices, dana. And the other aspect that's quite common is, cultural festivals, so marking particular times of the year and particular occasions with festivals that bring the community together and then the ceremonies and practices around that. So in Ordinary Mind, we don't really have those, or very, very minimal if we have any aspects of those practices. So it's really all about the Zazen. And we do a lot of it. So the idea is if a member of Ordinary Mind Zen, you do your daily sitting at home, 30 minutes. You come to days like this quite regularly, half day or full day sitting. And then we do session, which is a retreat, which is sort of 8 or 9 hours of meditation a day. So, if you've come for a few years and taking part, you end up doing quite a lot of meditation. And I guess the question is, why do we do so much meditation, or why do we do any meditation at all? And there's some very sort of obvious reasons why we do meditation. And they have, they're also an important part of why we do it in Zen. But from a Zen perspective, that can actually be a bit of a trap. Just thinking about, the benefits of meditation and why we do meditation. So that's what I'll be talking about today. First of all, exploring some of the reasons why we come to meditation and might find it a beneficial practice. And then also some of the Zen perspectives on meditation and, maybe having a slightly different view from that. So meditation has been around for thousands of years and particularly strongly in Buddhism and Hinduism, but also other religions, Christianity, things like that. And recently there's been a real explosion in research in mindfulness meditation. So it seems like it's fairly new, but in fact there's been quite a lot of research even in the 70s, so Herbert Benson was looking at the relaxation response, which counteracts the stress response. And then there was quite a bit of research into transcendental meditation. So it's not all brand new, but certainly there's been a lot of studies on mindfulness recently, and now there's literally thousands of them. And so the benefits that they're finding with these studies is quite significant. So the brain actually changes physically when someone does long-term meditation practice. Things like, increased thickness in the prefrontal cortex and also more activation parts of the brain where positive feeling states are. Then there's improved health outcomes and mental health, physical health outcomes. Interpersonal relationships, improved therapeutic relationships. So when a therapist meditates or a caregiver meditates, that has a beneficial effect on the person they're with. Working more skillfully with addictive behaviors, and that can be a range of just everyday addiction that we all have. Some of those addictive behaviors to the more serious addictions, and living with chronic pain and illness, preventing burnout. So there's a lot of benefits. So you can say, yeah, of course we meditate. There's a lot of benefits here. And recently there's also been a sort of discussion, especially in Buddhist circles, about, this mainstreaming of mindfulness and some of the benefits of that and some of the pitfalls of that as well. So I've been teaching mindfulness for 10 years, and there's certainly a lot of benefits in taking it out of the Buddhist tradition because it's much more accessible to people who would never come to something like this. They wouldn't come to a Buddhist group, but even if they did, they may not subscribe to the Buddhist worldview. That might not be for them, but they can still practice meditation and benefit from it. And so there's a lot of benefit with that. It's now called evidence-based, and there's a lot of research. Some of it's quite good, sort of standard research. Quite a lot of it's of poor quality. I've been reading a lot of research lately as part of my studies, and what tends to come through quite a bit is that real lack of understanding what meditation actually is and what a long-term practice actually involves. So it can be very sort of superficial, but certainly there's quite a lot of research there. And one of the things I've really noticed and that other people have commented on as well, that there's this real emphasis on being very outcome focused. So, you know, if you do 8 weeks of this MBSR course, then you'll have these sort of benefits. And if you do that, then things will improve. So it's kind of can become one more thing that we have to achieve, a skill in and acquire something that we can purchase. We can purchase apps and courses and workshops. And it's kind of can become a little bit of that personal development thing, like I want to feel better, so I'm going to do meditation to help me be better at work and things like that to help me feel better about my life. And it's kind of losing, it can, not all the time, but it can lose that perspective of why we're actually doing a practice is not just for ourselves, so that more community-minded sense of why we might do a, you know, religious practice or spiritual practice. So I've talked about the community aspect before, but recently I've been reading about Indigenous healing as well, and one of the things that comes to raise strongly in Indigenous healing is that sense of you do this healing journey in order to then serve the community and bring the healing back to the community. So it's not all about, it's not about you really at all. You're getting the support of the community to go on this journey, and then you take it back to the community, and then you support others. And again, in some of the mainstreaming of mindfulness that can get a bit lost. So when we think of mindfulness or meditation as just something that will help us and that sort of has an outcome and that we can acquire and achieve, from a Buddhist point of view, what that can then feed into is the Second Noble Truth. So with the Buddha's Four Noble Truths, the Second Noble Truth is, the first one is that there's dukkha, sometimes translated as suffering, but more correctly, it's the unsatisfactory nature of existence. So even when we're happy, we're going to be sad. Even when we have loved ones around us, they will die and we will die. You know, even, if you're feeling well, one day we'll be sick again. So that's sort of that sense of dukkha. And we tend to come to something like this practice out of a sense of dukkha. So we come because some aspect of our life doesn't feel quite right. Sometimes it's more that sense of, you know, there must be more to life than this. Or it can be quite strong suffering, physical suffering or emotional suffering. So we usually come with the reason. And from a Zen point of view, that's a good thing because it gets us started. And that's sort of the initial motivator. But then if we just get stuck in that, then that can become problematic. Because the second noble truth is that the dukkha is really caused by grasping, aversion, and ignorance, so that we constantly want things that make us feel better, and we have this aversion for things that, you know, we don't like, and that we're also ignorant about what really is going on, the true nature of our mind, which is that sense of no self and impermanence. And so if we kind of become very outcome focused, and this can be at a very deep unconscious level, so we might think, oh, I'm not like that, you know. I'm much more into the spiritual side or whatever. But deep down, what Barry Magid calls the secret practice can actually be sitting there for a long, long time. So Barry Magid is also a teacher in Ordinary Mind Zen. He's based in New York, and he's written some wonderful books, which I'll refer to as well. So let's have a look at what some of the, I guess, Zen texts say about meditation, some of the ideas that sort of come through. So one of them we had today, the Hakuin Senju Song of Zazen, and it says part of it, generosity, patience, self-discipline, the many parameters all rise within Zazen. So there's a sense that we practice Zazen in order to cultivate what's called the parameters, which are certain qualities. And the six parameters are generosity, and then patience, self-discipline, also diligence and enthusiasm, so having energy in our practice, the action meditation, and the development of wisdom. So by doing a lot of meditation, and we sort of know this, you know, we do get more patient because we can't do our usual, you know, I'm feeling restless, so I'll get up and just do whatever I do. It does develop a discipline, you know, it's quite a disciplined practice. And the patience, self-discipline, and the sense of generosity can also arise as we're doing meditation practice, and hopefully a bit of wisdom along the way as well. So there's quite a lot of paradox in how Zen looks at meditation. So if you have a look at some of the things that Dogen says about meditation. So he says, between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there is not a moment's gap. So So basically, it's all there. And a very famous saying by Dogen is, Zazen is enlightenment. So there's no Zazen to do to get enlightened. Zazen already is enlightenment. And he also says, this Zazen of which I speak is not a technique of meditation, but the Dharma gate of joy and ease. And so the idea is that one of the ideas might be that practicing Zazen, just that practice is already getting us away from some of the grasping and aversion that's usually happening in our lives because we haven't got the opportunity to do it, at least not at the more obvious level. But like I was saying, at a deeper level, we can unconsciously still be doing some of that. And there's also a sense that we don't actually need to meditate, that meditation is just happening, and we just become part of something larger than ourselves. This is a great book that Jeff has recommended, and I would recommend as well. And it's called What's Wrong with Mindfulness, and then What Isn't? And it's edited by Robert Rosenbaum, and also Barry Madgett, who I mentioned before, who's one of the teachers in Ordinary Mind Zen. And I just found this quote. So this is by Robert Rosenbaum, and he's talking about some of the research into mindfulness and some of the problems he has with how it's being done. And he says, the Western need to justify practice by measuring and quantifying assumes utilitarianism as the highest good. But this is ultimately tragic, for it implies you too must justify yourself as having some use. Simply being yourself, it seems, is somehow not enough. And I think that really gets to the heart of what Zen is talking about. So a couple of other Zen definitions of mindfulness. So Gil Fronsdal, who's also mentioned in that book, he says, mindfulness or meditation, a state of receptive awareness, not requiring self-conscious effort. And Barry Madge's mindfulness definition is of purposeless awareness. Just simple awareness, no purpose at all. Now, the paradox is that, of course, we actually need to work quite hard in meditation, especially at times when the mind is very restless, and we do a lot of disciplined practice that is really quite focused. So just turning up and saying, okay, I'm now enlightened and da-da-da is not going to work, as we know. So there's the paradox of saying, you know, meditation is just meditation. It's very simple. It's already all there. And this is what you have to do. And we actually sometimes have to work quite hard. And certainly we're not always sitting in the Dharma gate of joy and ease when we're meditating. You know, sometimes we go through really quite difficult emotional states. So we need to work hard. And that's definitely very important. But what we can be aware of, and that's where having a teacher is really helpful, that can sort of keep you on track, is what is the underlying motivation? Where are we coming from? And is there an element of that secret practice? That if I just practice long enough and hard enough, then somehow everything will be okay eventually. It might be down the track, but eventually everything will be fine. And what that motivation is actually saying, that we're constantly saying to life, no, you're not good enough just yet, but one day you will be. But at the moment, you're not good enough just yet. So it's really sort of exploring that underlying motivation. Are we really saying, because Zen is really about saying yes to life, just in that moment, yes. But we can often be saying no at a deeper level. So I'd like to finish with a quote by Barry Madgett, which I really liked. So he said about practice, practice should simplify, soften, and open up our minds, not pump them up on spiritual steroids. Wisdom and compassion flow from simplicity and clarity, from having nothing to prove and nothing to defend. Thank you.